You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled, and marginalized creatives and their art. If you can afford to help me keep the podcast going and help me get the transcription service in place, please sign up to my Patreon for as little as £1 a month on patreon.com/agparker. You can also buy me a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which you can find on my link tree. And now, on with the show. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Gregory. Andrew Gregory is a 51-year-old amputee, pole performer and teacher living and working in central London. He is a 2x world para pole champion, along with many other competitive pole titles. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I've been following your work for ages on social media. And then I was so lucky to get to see you perform at Parapride in Hackney earlier this year.
Oh, that was such a great event. And it was really nice to meet you in person. It's kind of weird when those sort of events happen that, you know, it's quite a well-connected community via social media. But when you actually do an event like that, where all those people come together, it's really nice to actually see people in real life.
It's so lovely. Yeah, there's so many people that I've followed for a while. And as you say, kind of, especially for me, like with my fatigue levels, I don't always get out. So I do follow people on social media, but it can take me quite a while to actually get to meet people in the flesh.
Having all those performers together in one space.
Oh my God.
It doesn't happen very often. You know, we all perform at different events, but never under one kind of para umbrella at one event. So I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so what was it like being a part of something like that? And I guess, is it a different feel to being, as you say, you know, different performers perform at different events, but what was it like everybody being in the same room?
I mean, I felt immensely proud to be a part of that, but also amongst those other performers. You know, we all have our difficulties with life and, you know, all the rubbish that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and to come together and to all see each other's work live, I think was powerful, not just for us as performers, also for the audience. But, you know,
I was losing my shit.
Okay, I'm glad. I mean, it was really nice for me to be able to perform and then sit back and watch the rest. You know, it was... Because when you're prepping, when I was getting ready to go on, I couldn't really see the people that were on before me. But after me, it was so nice to be an audience member, and the vibe was incredible.
The vibe was so good. And I feel like it's something that we needed after, particularly after like 3 years of the pandemic and kind of being separate. And then suddenly to have all these gorgeous, gorgeous, like disabled and queer performers in one space is amazing. Is it something you think we need to do more often? Is there I don't want to say a market, but is there an audience for that?
There is definitely an audience for that. I like to see performers with disabilities mixed in with performers that don't have disabilities. Do you know what I mean? I wish there was more performances that include disabled performers in their regular lineup. But it's really nice to have those events where we only have disabled performers as well. But there's definitely a market for it, absolutely. I think I would definitely like to see something more. I mean, that was kind of like daytime. It would be nice to do something more kind of like evening, kind of real showtime kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
So something that I might work towards, who knows? You know, it would be great to have, you know, you see those cabaret evenings, there's a lot of them around, but it would be great to have one that is, you know, all disabled performers at an evening where the general public are there, not necessarily just people that follow the disability performers online. You know, it's a wider audience is what I'm trying to say.
So I 100% agree with you. I am obviously quite biased though. being a disabled and queer performer. I think there's such a huge need for a night that's dedicated to solely disabled performers, but also to see queer and disabled performers in a more mainstream kind of lineup as well on a regular basis is so important. Because you're right, a lot of mainstream audience members might not go to see a quote unquote disabled show, but they will kind of, you can feed them some good disability representation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But also if it's on Parapride is amazing, but it depends on what it reaches and whether it reaches the kind of people that would normally go to an event like that. Just a regular evening.
I would love
that. I have this really weird fantasy of putting on putting together a show where the audience members have to struggle to get to their seats, so it's like we put the disability onto the audience members actually getting into the venue to see what it's like for them.
Oh my God, I love that.
I think it would be great, but like climb over things or get through doorways that are too narrow, or I think it would be just really interesting that audience members are suddenly given a struggle just to get in. I'll make that happen one day. I think it would be fun.
I would, if I ever got given money, I would give it to you so that you could do that. That's amazing. Yeah. I love that. I guess what we need are more cabaret producers in general to just make sure that when they're choosing their lineup for any given evening, make sure they've got somebody, a person of color, a disabled artist, a queer person,
I mean, it did happen for a while. Kind of like when we first came out of lockdown, I think inclusivity sort of made a big leap ahead. And people were kind of introducing a much more diverse lineup of events. And then it seems to have sort of drifted back to how it was pre-pandemic. And it's kind of like, I think the world could do with a little reminder that, the inclusivity thing was doing so well.
It was doing so well. I think a lot of us have real hope.
Yeah. And I think it's just sort of been forgotten a little bit.
Yeah. What did you put that down to?
Bums on seats, I reckon.
people.
Exactly. I just don't think people want to take risks when they're putting money into an event. So maybe they choose performers that they know aren't going to challenge an audience. Who knows?
I know as well as when I was producing my cabaret, that in terms of finding a venue that is accessible, that will give you the time, I was like, oh cool, I can get this venue pretty much whatever evening I want. They're giving me all these fantastic things for support, but it's down two flights of stairs.
I mean, this is, I kind of forget about accessibility issues because I mean obviously I'm disabled, I'm an amputee, but my accessibility issues are not really I don't really have them, but I kind of forget that actually a lot of those venues that are great for cabaret are completely inaccessible for most people.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right, it's finding those spaces.
Yeah, it's not always the case that the people that you think are going to struggle with, I have a friend performer who's in a wheelchair and he was like, yeah, I'll perform down two flights of stairs, that's totally fine. But then it's okay, he's fine, but the rest of the audience or the acts that might come might not be. So you spoke a little bit about people kind of wanting a sure thing, and that could be influencing why they don't get disabled performers. Is there an issue of acceptance of queer disabled performers?
That's a really good question. You see, in my eyes, there isn't, but then I'm a disabled queer performer. It's kind of hard to know. There's a portion of the community out there who don't give a damn whether it's somebody disabled or where they are, but then there's also those people that find it hard to accept that somebody with a disability can be as entertaining as somebody without. I sometimes wonder if then do we project onto that audience and think that that's what they're thinking. It's such a weird thing. It's such a weird thing. It's like, I don't really know why people don't book disabled artists. I really don't. I'm not sure what people think about disabled artists when they see them. You know, it's hard to actually understand the real reasons for any of this, you know?
Yeah. I think some of it must be from a lack of understanding and from a kind of like a bit of a fear-based decision as well, in terms of, oh God, if I make accommodations for one disabled performer, does that mean I then have to, you know, put in more effort?
Yeah.
Subsequent, but you know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I know. It's a very weird world we live in.
It's such a weird world. And so in terms of not performing, but in a more kind of social sense, have you seen or experienced anything in the way of acceptance on the gay scene because of disability?
Well, I mean, I've been amputee now for 5 years, and I haven't really been out on the gay scene since my amputation. So I can't really answer that question for you. I know. It's a bit of a strange one. You know, the gay people that I come across really don't are very accepting.
Yeah.
But then my disability is, I mean, to be honest, I'm in this on the scale of disability, mine is not really. But you know, I don't see myself as that disabled because it doesn't really. I still look like most of the gay guys. Yeah, I've got a limb that comes off. I'm not sure it's that scary for people.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have somebody who maybe uses a wheelchair or crutches, or, you know, I think that's when people find it slightly harder to deal with as far as the gay scene goes, because visually you're not looking perfect. You don't look like everybody else.
Yeah. I think the aesthetic consideration is something that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you know, the gay scene, that's kind of what it is all about. It's about looking perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard the, so Andrew Gerzo, who's a fantastic disability advocate and hosts their own podcast show, they came on this podcast and he was talking a little bit about acceptance within the gay community and how disabled, if you're not a cis male with abs who is gorgeous, it's really hard to be accepted on the gay scene.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of agree with that. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're disabled or not. I mean, you could be short and plump, yeah, you know, and you'll still have the same level of acceptance.
I kind of like that. That's like a bit, is that inclusion? Is that like acceptance?
I know. I mean, when I was really out on the gay scene in my 20s in London, it was when everything was, I mean, this is not an offensive term now, but it was all what we call muscle Marys. But,
yeah.
You know, it was like all these like real gym bodies, which seems to, it's not quite so extreme now. But I didn't used to fit in then. And then I had all my limbs. it's a weird, the gay scene as such is a very strange place if you don't look the way that you should, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting as well that you say you don't consider yourself that disabled.
Oh my God, it's such a weird thing. It's not that I absolutely am disabled, but when an event like Parapride, and I see the struggles that people have just getting in and out of the building with wheelchairs or, you know, whatever, I consider myself very lucky to not have those difficulties. You know, they were struggling to build the ramp on the side of the stage, and it's like that wouldn't have mattered to me because I can get on and off the stage without a ramp
and up and down a pole.
exactly. So I almost feel a little bit guilty in those situations that I don't have the same struggles as the people around me. But then, that's just my feeling of guilt when I'm around people with bigger disabilities than me. So I kind of, when I've got my leg on, I kind of think I'm not really disabled at all. But the minute I take my leg off, it all changes, you know?
So this is really interesting because there's so many disabled, like, and I can't even count actually how, I think it's most disabled people I've spoken to who are like, oh, but like, I'm not that disabled, or there's somebody that's more disabled than me. And I find it so funny that we have this inbuilt urge, which is probably because of society or the DWP, that we have to like compare ourselves and be like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not that bad. Oh my God.
I mean, when I take my leg off and I'm crawling across the floor, I am absolutely really very disabled.
Yeah.
But I'm just in that position where I, you know, I can put my leg on and get up and walk, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, when we talk about like non-disabled people as well, like their capabilities, they vary on a daily basis. They vary from person to person. So many, you know, non-disabled people I know can't walk particularly far.
Absolutely. One of my favorite lines to people when they're talking about disability is, well, you know, can you do what I do? And they'll say, no. Does that make you disabled? Do you know what I mean? If you can't do what I do, does that mean that you're disabled? And I kind of, they're always kind of like a bit taken back by that.
I'm at this point, I'm going to encourage anyone listening to just pause the podcast and go and look at Andrew's social media and look at some videos of what he can do, because the whole world is disabled if that is not.
I mean, can't everybody do a backflip off the pole from 6 feet up? I mean onto 1 foot. I mean, I'm assuming everybody can do that, right?
It's so like incredible, and you're such a captivating performer. And getting to see you live, I just lost my shit, as I said. One thing I really love as well is that it shows how disabled people can still be physically active, like while being disabled, because there's this weird misconception that disabled always means can't do it. Despite the fact we've got Paralympians and disabled athletes gaining more media attention in recent years.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
But let's just add straight in there that just because you're disabled does not mean that you have to be super active and excel at something. Because there is that thing. I know a lot of people see a lot of very, I'm going to use that word, sorry, inspirational disabled people. I know, but you know what I mean. And they think that that is the norm. So when they meet somebody who's disabled, who isn't doing something full on, they're surprised. It's like, you know, not all disabled people are active, and that is absolutely fine as well.
Definitely, it's more than fine. It's good self-care.
It's more than fine. Yeah. You understand where I'm coming from with that.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like the most kind of uncomfortable I get is when people call me inspirational for doing something. Like, but you've climbed the stairs, you know, going to the gym or something. I have to have talks with people, because if you encourage that kind of positive feedback every time I push myself to do something that's maybe harmful for me, I will push myself into a point where my husband has to like dress and feed and wash me.
Right.
So it's so worth noting that, yeah, like, looking after your own energy levels and doing what's right is more important than
being
the inspiration.
I mean, I know when people talk about inspirational, I know that it's coming from a good place. And I know that in their minds, they think they are probably the first person saying it to you. But it's like, yeah, I know where you're coming from. I understand it, but guys, come on.
Yeah, like,
just tell me I'm good. Just, you know, I'd much rather say, oh my gosh, you're so good on the pole.
Yeah, well, because you are. And I feel like comments like inspirational devalue the genuine talent that you have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I just want to reiterate, I do understand it comes from a good place.
Yeah, but also stop doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, I think as a society, if we can move on from that, that would be really cool. Okay, so that's acceptance of disability in a performing sense and a social sense. The other extreme where we're not accepted, the other end of that is fetishization of amputees or people with disabilities.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole world, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of knew... leading up to I had to decide to have my amputation, but I kind of knew heading into it that side existed.
Yeah.
I think I wasn't quite ready for just how forward people
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah. So I actually, is this a weird thing to say? No, it's not a weird thing to say. So on my main page, I was having comments left on stuff. And it was like, they're not necessarily offensive comments. They were just slightly... it didn't really fit with what I was trying to show on my social media from amputee from fetishists. So I kind of actually set up a separate page, which I kind of steer people towards. So like if somebody leaves a comment of a sexual kind of nature on something, I'll kind of get them away from my main page, put them onto my other page, just to try and get them into, you know. But it is incredible how forward people are, and also they think that you are gonna fancy them. And it's most of these people, it's like they never ask, they never say, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, I like amputees, I like this, that, and the other, but nobody ever says, what do you like? It's
like, so they just objectify you and assume that you'll be,
yeah,
wow,
yeah, and maybe because I'm disabled that I'll take sympathy on these people or something, you know, like I need to be supported by somebody who's a fetishist, but it's, they're very rarely attractive people. I mean these, I say, you know, that's wrong. Yeah, everybody has, of course, has attractive qualities about them, but
yeah, but if you're not attracted to them, you're not attracted to them.
yeah exactly, and they can't deal with that at all. And the images that you get sent, the questions that you get asked, and then they get angry when you don't answer them. Or,
oh, that sounds awful. Yeah. It sounds pretty invasive.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's the danger of social media. People are sat at home; they don't think about the effect of what they're saying is on a real person.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
It sounds super weird. I know other disabled. Yeah. Like influencers and social media personalities kind of get that on quite a regular basis, and people just saying the most depraved shit. Like,
oh, yeah,
what? Why?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's the dehumanization of disabled people as a whole anyway in society. So I guess maybe if you add that to the kind of objectification of people, yeah.
It's, I mean, there's some weird people out there.
There's some weird people, yeah.
Weird people out there. And, you know, I'm all for a fetish. It's like, that's absolutely fine. But it's how you deal with it. You know, it's kind of, don't be aggressive. Don't be, you know.
Yeah. If somebody was like really, if you found someone really attractive, but they were sexualizing and fetishizing, fuck me.
Yes, I've had that message a few times as well from people.
I can imagine. But yeah, if you found someone really attractive, but they were fetishizing your amputation, would that be a deal breaker? Or is that something that you could kind of
work? Oh, absolutely. Do you know what? If somebody was approached me and they're like, you know, I find you attractive, but I also find your amputation attractive. That's, do you know what? That's absolutely fine, because, you know, we all like things like blonde hair, blue eyes,
yeah,
muscles or no muscles. You know what I mean? All those kind of things that people have a type, and I don't have a problem with my amputation being included in that list.
Yeah.
But you get people who are just talking to my amputation, you know? It's like they're talking to my stump. They don't care about the rest of it.
That's just got to be really uncomfortable. Also, though, I will say, there was one point when I was watching you perform when you really played to it, because you took your leg off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, I know.
You gave the audience a bit of a sexy look there. Like,
yeah,
oh.
I know. And actually, I kind of, there's that routine that I performed was originally. Oh, it's going to destroy everything I've just said, talked about. Was it actually performed in a fetish club? So there was a much bigger sexual element in it where I am playing with my stump in a much more sexual kind of way. I mean, not like, but that's mine to do, you know? And I sort of didn't mean to do it when I was performing at Parapride. And I'd already
taken
out everything else, but it was like, I caught myself doing it. It was like, oh no.
No, that was, I thought
but
that was like.
It's kind of fun, that, you know, as long as it's not over exaggerated, it's kind of fun, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I can imagine that working in like a more nighttime setting.
Absolutely.
Then, yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know that the whole routine is like quite a sexy routine. I mean, obviously, like, you're on a pole and you look incredible when you're doing what you're doing, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you fit your performance for your audience. So the first time I performed that was at, it was at Torture Garden.
Oh, gosh.
Which I mean, I used to hang out at Torture Garden a lot. I think the fetish scene is incredible. It's a really rich tapestry of incredible people, incredible respectful people.
Yeah.
So people to who play don't with. Consent. Yeah, exactly. So to play with that thing of, you know, I take my leg off, everybody that's listening, I take my leg off halfway through the routine. To then actually play with the stump felt like the right thing to do in that environment, you know?
Yeah.
But then I take that same performance to a different venue and I have to desexualize it completely, you know? So you can,
really,
you know,
not
you,
successful
you...
at doing.
yeah, I know. I almost remembered not to do it.
No, I like it's so wonderful. The energy that you bring to the stage is magnificent.
Oh, thank you.
So you're.
I think as well. I'm not embarrassed. I'm just not embarrassed by being an amputee. I'm not embarrassed by my stump.
You're like,
not,
why would
no,
you? Be...
All those things. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm super confident. I weirdly like being an amputee. I like the limb that I have, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird. I think like loving your body, whatever it is that's so cool. If everybody could get to that, how happier we'd be.
It's so true. It's very true.
Yeah, I say that. I wish I loved my body. My body.
Oh, don't listen. I was just thinking. I was just thinking while I was saying that. Doesn't mean to say I don't hate my nose or my chin or my. but I do like my limb.
Well, there you go. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Rock it, own it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. So as well as performing, you're a teacher as well.
Yeah. So I have many strings, many things going on. So yeah, I teach pole as well. And I teach pole to able-bodied students as well as an increasing amount of disabled people as well, which is fantastic. But I also have a full-time job working as a hairdresser, which takes me, I get to travel quite a lot with that. I'm very lucky with the clientele that I have. And then I perform and I also do bigger performances. So I was at the Jubilee last year. I've got a massive event coming up later on this year, which I'm just about to start rehearsals for. I'm very excited about that. So yeah, I have lots of different things going on at the same time.
Is that quite rewarding, I guess, having a variety of things?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, it's all supported by the fact that I have a very successful business. You know, I don't have to go out looking for performances to earn a living.
Yeah.
It's very different. It would be very different if that was my income. So when things come my way, it's amazing, but I don't rely on that as an income. So yeah, it's nice to have that the backbone with my hairdressing business, and then everything else is just a bonus.
Congratulations, so that's really good.
Thank
and
you.
How about teaching pole? So where do you teach your pole?
I teach at London Dance Academy, which is in Old Street. I teach there on a Sunday afternoon. I have like 5 classes in a row, varying levels. And then I also teach private one-to-one sessions as well. And I love teaching. It's really helped me understand my pole work better. You know, you've got to like break things down.
Mm.
It kind of really helps you understand the physicality of the things that you do.
Yeah. Is it nice as well? Is it rewarding getting to teach kind of new disabled students as well?
It is. I mean, I am totally blown away by it. At the moment, I am teaching a girl who's blind.
Mm.
And it constantly amazes me just how incredible she is. I've got another student who has part of her arm missing. And the determination, I think I've forgotten that I was there once, you know. You've got to be really determined when you have a difficulty with your body to do something physical. And it just makes me want to cry when I see people working so hard trying to overcome it. It's great.
That's wonderful. That is so, that's such a wonderful gift to be able to give people as well, like that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing. So the next question is a question I ask all the guests on this podcast. If you were a mythical, and if you haven't heard this before, this might be a bit weird. If you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
Oh, wow.
So the idea is because we're all, everyone that comes on the podcast is marginalized in some ways, whether it be through disability, race, or whatever. And so the way that we get kind of treated and seen by society tends to be like we're, you know, like monsters, or, you know, I'm a dragon, for instance. So, yeah.
I think I'd want to be something. Actually, I can't make a decision. I'd say I'd want to be something kind of like a chimera of some kind. So maybe like two animals joined together.
Ooh, yeah.
So maybe something, I don't know. Like a griffin, or something. What are those? Oh, a centaur. You know, they're kind of like the man's body with a horse, the horse's legs behind them. Is that a centaur?
Yeah.
I know what it would be.
Okay.
A Pan. You know the kind of guys with the goat legs?
Yes, absolutely.
That is exactly what it would be. There's this guy, artist called Matthew Barney, who created a character based on Pan. And I was always fascinated by those extra ankle joints. And I would love those legs. So yeah, that's what I would be. I would be kind of like a Pan kind of character.
I love that. Would you still be able to do pole with
Pan? Absolutely. Can you imagine having like three joints in your leg instead of two? I'd be able to do incredible things.
That's amazing. I'm blown away by how many people on this podcast want to have some kind of like extra legs, or some kind of like
I'd like weirder legs. I get slightly jealous of double amputees. I think, oh, if I had two legs amputated, I could have completely different legs attached. You know, it doesn't really work with one because it's like they need to be sort of symmetrical.
Yeah,
I'd like to have really weird prosthetics, you know.
Do it. I mean, get weird with them, like.
Oh, I've got one very weird one. I did some work with the Alternative Limb Project, and I have one that is sort of the bottom bit looks like a cross between a hoof and a stiletto. but it only really works for performing. I can't really walk on it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds
stunning.
Like a nightmare.
It's absolutely stunning.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Do you have, this has been such a joy to get to actually like sit down and talk with you. Do you have any last bits of words of wisdom or anything for our listeners?
That's a tough one.
you don't have to, you can just say. Like,
No. I mean, you know, kind of be accepting of people around you. If you don't have a disability, if you do have a disability, allow people around you to be accepting of you. You know, I was saying earlier, we're very good at projecting what we think people are thinking.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we create a barrier ourselves. So kind of to the people without disabilities, don't create a barrier. And to people with disabilities, don't create a barrier.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. I'm definitely guilty, or have previously been guilty of the latter. So
We all do it. Oh, I'm not going to speak to that person because they're going to have a problem with my disability.
Yeah, and actually,
I haven't even spoken to them.
Yeah. A lot of the time, people are quite cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes, anyway. Andrew, where can people see you? Have you got any upcoming shows that you can talk about?
I am. What can I talk about? I've got a. I'm competing at a big event at the end of May, which is up in Peterborough. It's called Paul Theatre. My next big performance, I can't talk about.
Oh my God. I'm so excited to see that when we're allowed to hear.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be. yeah, it's exciting. I didn't think I would be able to top the Queen's Jubilee, but it looks like I'm going to top the Queen's Jubilee. So,
That's amazing.
yeah.
Congratulations on that. Oh, that's
Thank
so
you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you
Oh,
so
it's been a
much.
joy. It's been an absolute joy. Sorry if I've waffled
No, oh God, no, not at
or gone
all.
off on
The
tangents. Yeah.
amount of we love a tangent on this podcast, and I'm the
Cool.
waffler, so don't worry. Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.